From Buck Studio, Wisconsin Public Radio, this is Zorba Pastor on Your Health. I'm Tom Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor, here to talk with you about what's new in healthy living, share some down-to-earth advice, and some great lifestyle tips to help you get the most out of life. If you have a question for Zorba, you can call us now at 800-462-7413. And Zorba, along with our calls, some interesting topics to talk about.
Yes. Light therapy for depression, we know it does something for seasonal affective disorder, but will it work for regular, good old-fashioned garden variety depression? We'll talk about an interesting study. And we'll talk about ColoGuard, the new way of basically trying to find out whether or not you have colon cancer, what the U.S. Public Service Task Force thinks, and what it may mean for the future for colon cancer screening.
Okay, and our recipe is mac and cheese.
Well, mac and cheese, kind of green mac and cheese, a variation. I mean, let's have a little variation, a five-ingredient variation. Are you accusing me of not being creative? Come on, Tom, come on.
That's coming up in, 25 minutes or so. Let's get to the phones, welcoming our first caller, a listener in Jacksonville, Florida. Hi.
Hello, guys. How are you doing today? Thanks for taking my call.
Sure. How can we help?
Well, I called in to ask about a back manipulation I had done for the first time by a chiropractor. I had headaches that were constant, so I went in just reading that this could solve the problem. It actually did. However, now I have back pain almost every day from this. I'd never had it before. I'm in my 30s, and I work out regularly, so it's been about 6 months now and no healing. So I'm calling in maybe to see your advice or if you've heard of this before.
Did they do a cranial manipulation, of your neck? What they actually do? And how many treatments did you have?
Only one. I don't think I'll ever go back.
Only one treatment. Wow.
Yes.
Wow.
Only one treatment, mm-hmm. And I was on my back, and they did a cranial manipulation, mm-hmm. And then also laid on my stomach to do a back manipulation.
Did you call the chiropractor back or anything that you did with the chiropractor, or you just never returned?
Yeah, I did call them back, and I spoke with them about the pain that I was having and how me as not being comfortable with having another manipulation. And so I chose not to go further with this, but I have been doing, you know, massages, mm-hmm. and yoga, anything that might help, been to a neurologist, but...
So you went to a neurologist. So tell me about the visit to the neurologist.
They did do an MRI on me and found nothing that would cause any kind of pain.
Mm-hmm.
And then they also did a test, some kind of electromagnetic pulses, mm-hmm. that, you know, tested the sensitivity in the area.
They did an EMG. That's usually what's an EMG. And didn't find anything. They did an upper EMG or a lower, in the low back? Where did they do the EMG? In the legs or in the arms?
It was in my arms, mm-hmm. and in my upper back.
Is that where your pain is, by the way, in the upper back or lower back?
It is, yeah, it's upper back.
Wow, you know, it's interesting. Clearly something happened during the traumatic, happened during this manipulation, and you've had a medical workup. MRIs will, they'll show some things. They don't show everything. I mean, they're very good imaging tests. But, for instance, the MRI can't give an explanation of why some people have back pain and some people don't. You know, some people have very abnormal MRIs and CAT scans and have no back pain at all. And other people have completely normal, like you, MRIs and back pain, you know, and CT scans, and will have pain and discomfort. Have you had a trial of steroids or, you know, high-dose anti-inflammatories at all?
I haven't, no. Uh-huh.
I think if I had back pain like this, I would try a couple of different things. First of all, you've had imaging, so we know what it is, and you've had an EMG, so you've had a workup. Sometimes a trial of steroids, 20 milligrams of prednisone daily for a week, sometimes for 2 weeks, can actually reduce the inflammation, and that can make a difference. Going, like you said, to physical, you know, to massage therapy can make a difference in exercises. If I still had back pain, I'd also look towards other complementary remedies, such as acupuncture. Have you gone to acupuncture at all?
I've actually spoken with someone, yes. I'm going to try that, too. I'll try anything.
Yeah. The other, there's something else that I would look at, something called the Alexander Technique. And the Alexander Technique is, they're often 3 to 5 sessions. They teach you how to posture, how to bend, how to sit, how to move. And something may help you out of this trauma. It's very, very difficult. Back pain is often difficult to have a handle on. And I think I would once again look at steroids, acupuncture, and the Alexander Technique. I think it was from the chiropractic because clearly it happened after that visit. And so there's some trauma and we just don't know what it is and can't image it. So I would try those things.
Okay. Thank you for the advice.
Thanks. Thanks for your call.
Appreciate the call at 800-462-7413.
You know, the interesting thing and the sad thing about back and neck pain is that we don't have imaging techniques so that we can say it's caused by this or caused by that. We don't actually understand about 50% at least of all back pain. And this is a good example. Here it was. It was a chiropractic manipulation. A facet, a bony facet or a nerve or a muscle or a ligament clearly got traumatized during the manipulation. And now she has pain. And we don't have a clear-cut answer as to what it is, and therefore we don't have a clear-cut answer as how to treat it.
Let's take another call now, Zorba. A listener joins in Potosi, Wisconsin. Hi.
Hello, gentlemen. Mm-hmm. I had called a while back about a stumper question. Every time I drink alcohol, hard stuff, no wine, nothing easy, mm-hmm. my feet would go numb. And doctor said to try to take like a Claritin or something like that to help before I drink. It helps, except for it no longer is my tingling in my feet, it's tingling in my head.
So this is tingling on your head. So
you mean like
when people put their hands on your head and they kind of wiggle their fingers like little kids, or when you did it?
Mm-hmm.
Does this happen while you're inebriating yourself with an alcoholic beverage? Just trying to check to see. Is that when it occurs?
Yes, and it occurs from the first drink.
For the first drink. So, pray tell, what is that first drink usually a drink of? What is the
anything
beverage?
Anything hard liquor.
Anything hard. Like. So it doesn't happen with wine, does not happen with beer.
Nope, because I don't drink those.
You don't drink wine and beer. You mean so it happens with a shot of Jack or some Cutty Sark or, you know, mm-hmm. something of
anything
that.
Anything really hard.
Anything
it's like,
really
okay.
Hard. How long after you have said beverage does this particular symptom occur?
Maybe 10 minutes. Until I'm done with the beverages, it don't go away.
You mean done with the beverages, meaning that you're no longer aware of the beverages nor of your environment? Is that what you're talking about?
That's right. When I'm done drinking for the evening.
When you're done drinking for the evening. Well, you know, I have to tell you something. As a physician, you know, we go to medical school for 4 years. We do training, of course, after medical school. I've done lots of continuing medical education. I have to do at least 50 hours. I usually do about 75 hours mm-hmm. reading, research. I do a lot of research through the internet. I'm widely read on medical topics. And not once in the entire time of my entire career, which has spanned many decades, have I ever seen any sort of a journal article or a discussion concerning tingling in the head following hard liquor. But I promise you that as soon as I find one, and I promise that I will do research the moment that we're done with the show, I will call you back and let you know. But, you know, this is stump the doctor time, and I have no idea what is going on.
But you know how to solve the problem.
I know how to solve the problem, and I think actually probably 100% of the people, because they're smart, public radio people are smart, 100% of the people on public radio also know the solution to the problem, but we do not know why it has occurred. And you are up there in the medical enigma mystery, the puzzle box of medical history. We could almost start a new section, medical enigmas.
Our listener knows how to solve the problem, too, but doesn't want to do it.
That's right. I think that we're talking about her in third person. Nor does she want to go to other beverages that are a bit less toxic, as some of us might say, than this particular beverage. So I would say That's how it goes. That's how it goes. You know, thanks for sharing this with us. I think many of our viewers and other people may actually chime in. You know, we have a Facebook. We've got a presence on Facebook. I occasionally tweet from now and then at zorbapastor.org. If anyone else has any unusual thoughts on what happens when they have a hard liquor tingling in the neck, face, jaw, gums, ears, or toes, please write us at zorbapastor.org, and we will post it on Facebook or discuss it on the air. Thank you so much for sharing that with us. And Tom would give you the advice, but of course you know the answer.
Yes.
Thanks a lot.
I hope you gentlemen have a good day.
Yeah, thanks. Appreciate the call at 800-462-7413.
You know, when I lecture from time to time, nationally, internationally, around the world, on the tube, the blogosphere, people often ask me, what's the hardest question you ever had to answer? And you know what? I think I will probably answer this particular question was one of the hardest questions I've ever had to answer because I don't have the foggiest idea
what's going on. Or the easiest to answer.
Or the easiest, that's right. What's the hardest question to answer and the easiest both at the same time?
Let's talk about light boxes now, Zorba.
I love light boxes. Now, I have seasonal affective disorder. I don't have depression with it, but once the days start to get short and the nights start to get long, I start to lose energy. I know exactly when the sun sets, exactly when it rises. My wife, Penny, goes, what are you talking about? I mean, it's just sort of dark in the evening, but I know what it is. I have four perfect children who have never given me an ounce of trouble my entire life. But my oldest son, Zach, is exactly the same way. He goes, Dad, yeah, you know, it's when it's wintertime, and he knows exactly when it sets. And his wife, Louisa, goes, why do you care about that? Well, we have seasonal affective disorder. So for many, many years, the treatment, by the way, is a light box. For many years, I recommended that people make their own light box with fluorescent lights. But now, thanks to LED technology, you actually can buy light boxes for $70. They're cool. They're not hot. They used to cost $300 to $500, and they were expensive. And they work. You do it 30 minutes a day in the morning. That's when I do it. I don't do it in the evening because it wakes me up. Mm-hmm. And you do it, you know, every morning. Sometimes I'll do it twice a week, sometimes every day. And it really works. But this is a study that shows it might work for depression. And I say might. And so this particular study, and I'll tell you what's wrong with this study and what's interesting.
Okay.
They took 120 people, 20 years of age to 60 years of age with major depression. Okay, so these are people. And we measure depression with a scale called a PDQ, PHQ rather, 9, or the Hamilton D scale. And there are different ways of measuring it, and it's a way of kind of scoring it. And they either got 30 minutes a day of fluorescent light, a fluorescent light equal to 10,000 lumens of a light box, 20 milligrams of Prozac, or both, or none. So in other words, Prozac, no Prozac, light plus Prozac. Yeah. They looked at them, you know, followed them over a period of time, and they discovered the people on the light box had less depression, and the people on the light box and Prozac did the best. So it looks like light box really works. But now let me tell you a fly in the ointment. Where do you think that came from, a fly in the ointment?
Well, people like to have ointment.
That's right. If there's a fly, it's kind of disgusting.
Must stick.
That's right. It must stick to the ointment.
Yeah.
The fly in the ointment is that in this particular study published in JAMA Depression, because they thought the study was interesting, Prozac was not superior to placebo.
What?
Right. That's exactly it. So in other words, the study didn't measure a difference. And we know that Prozac really separates out from placebo, that it's a very good drug.
Sure.
So therefore, it shows the study, even though it's very interesting, was not a good study. In other words, if the Prozac didn't separate out from placebo, that means there may have been something wrong with the study. They didn't have enough people. They didn't measure it right. They didn't pick the people right. A whole bunch of different things. So although I don't think this scientifically proves anything, I think it's still worth discussing because a light box is a non-pharmacological intervention for depression that might work.
Yeah.
So I think it's a very interesting study. So I'll tell you, I recommend one light box. I mean, there are a lot of different light boxes because it's the one I use. We'll put it on zorbapastor.org. Mm-hmm. We'll connect it. It happens to be sold at Amazon. If you put SAD light in Amazon, it's the first one that pops up, at least right now. It's $69.95 because I looked at it before this. And it's a wonderful LED light box because it's portable. It's got a timer on it. And I find it's very useful. It may be useful for depression. depression. I'm going to start to recommend this to my patients.
Good idea. 800-462-7413. That's 800-462-7413. And now, Zorba, let's see if we can help a listener in Grosbeck, Texas. Hi.
Hi, doctor. I'm glad you took my call.
Yeah, how can we help?
I've been going to the VA hospital for over 20 years, doctor, and suffer from high blood pressure, been fighting that. And maybe four times a year, I go there for lab work, and the lab results show blood in my urine every time. And this has been at least maybe going on for about 10 years. The doctors say don't worry about it. I'm just wondering, you know, I'm concerned.
Well, sure. So you've got some blood in the urine. We'll talk about that. First of all, there are two issues here. There's what we call microscopic hematuria, which means small amounts of blood in the urine. And then there's the regular blood in the urine where we actually see it. So clearly when you get the urine test, they see some, you know, some evidence of blood. Now, have they ever done a workup on this at all? Have they ever done a kidney test? Or...
No. Uh-huh. No. They just say it's consistent, the same amount of blood every time, and they say, you know, don't worry about it. That's
well,
seems to be your reply.
There's sort of a standard here that we usually follow. So first of all, before I tell you what the standard is, what's good is that this has gone on for 10 years and nothing bad has happened. So it's gone on for a long time. There's a lot of evidence in that. You don't want that to be the evidence, oh, let's watch it, and if nothing bad happens, then we were right. It's not exactly the right way to do things, but we do have that information now, and that's very, very useful. So the chances of something really bad being there are pretty small. So the standard treatment, if you have microscopic hematuria, blood in the urine, is to have a certain workup. That workup usually consists of looking at the kidneys. In our particular institution, we do a CAT scan. We do a CT scan to look at the kidneys, looking into the bladder with a scope, a cystoscope, to make sure that you don't have a cancer in the bladder, which is a cause of microscopic hematuria, you know, blood in the urine. We check out the prostate. We might do a PSA test check the prostate. But I think if I had blood in my urine, I wouldn't want to work up to have it. And a common thing, by the way, is that there's a stone in the kidney that is not blocking the kidney and is kind of wiggling around and stays there. And often we don't do anything about that. But that is a common cause of this. But another cause can be cancer. Chances of you having cancer because you have this 10-year history are pretty remote. But on the other hand, I'd like to have a diagnosis for it. I think you should be worked up. I agree with you. You need a workup for this. So when you say, what is it, and they say it's fine, they've never recommended that you have a workup for this.
No, they never have.
What I would do if I were a VA patient, which I am not, is I would call up my team and say, I'm not comfortable with this. I think I need a workup. I want to see a urologist to look at this and just become a little bit insistent. You're a VA and you're a veteran. And the reality is you have access to that system and they should send you to one of the urologists to get a workup for this. That's what you need to do.
Okay. All right, I'll certainly do that.
Thanks for your call. And please let us know what happens. I'd be very interested in so would Tom.
I certainly will. Thank you, sir.
Sure. You're welcome.
Appreciate the call at 800-462-7413.
You know, as I said, sometimes you have the benefit of time to see that nothing has happened. On the other hand, sometimes there's a clock in there that's ticking and there's something that's going to happen and you haven't picked it up and it's curable and fixable. And that's the whole problem with sampling. If you do a urine test, and we don't do urine screening tests anymore unless there's a reason. If you do the test and the test is abnormal, then you have to look at that test and determine the workup. And that's why you've got to be very careful with what screening tests you do, because often you'll pick up things that don't have importance.
It makes perfect sense. And before we take a break now, Zorba, let's hear from your favorite backseat drivers, the Grammar Police. Today's quibble comes to us from a listener, Richard, in Salt Lake City, Utah. He writes, Dear Dr. Pastor, first of all, great show. Now, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Now, gentlemen, he continues, on a recent show, a question arose concerning the taking of blood pressure too frequently. And the good doctor pointed out that doing so was erotic. I think Tom enjoyed that. I kind of did. But, of course, he meant to say erratic. You know, someone is always watching.
It depends on how you take that blood pressure.
I don't, there is a
Come
way.
On.
Is there an erotic
Come
way
on.
Of taking your
Come
blood
on.
Pressure?
Tom, there's some things that are best left to the imagination.
Well, I'm going to think about that. Were you always the first one to raise your hand in school? Well, now you can join the ever-growing grammar police force and send your grievances along in an email to
Zorba@WPR.org. And don't forget, we are on Facebook.
Get the kids in, because coming up next, a mac and cheese recipe. More of your calls, of course. We have our medical myth buster later in the hour, all right here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRI, Public Radio International. Tom Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. More of your calls coming up, but before that, Zorba, come on. Mac and cheese?
Well, you mean mac and cheese. How could there be a new variation? There's always a variation on mac and cheese. Do you like mac and cheese?
No.
Oh, wait a second. You live in Wisconsin and you don't like
mac and cheese?
Well,
I should have modified that.
Modified.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
I've only had it once.
You've only had it once?
And that was about...
Oh, my God. Where have you been?
That was about 2 months ago.
About 2 months ago?
Yeah, and I thought it was okay.
That's the only time... How about Kraft mac and cheese? Didn't you have that in college?
No.
Did you go to college?
Yes.
You never had Kraft macaroni and cheese in the blue box? I don't think
college students have mac and cheese anymore.
Oh, yes, they absolutely... Are you kidding?
Little kids like mac and cheese.
Come on. It is the standard in college to have mac and cheese with I remember parquet margarine. Was like wonderful.
Yeah, and isn't this supposed to be a health show? There's nothing healthy about mac and cheese.
Mac and cheese is great. It reminds you what it was like. My mother, who is not the greatest chef in the world, used to make mac and cheese, but she used to make macaroni.
So you're saying this is kind of a, you're saying this is a mental health recipe.
Well, it's a mental health recipe. Well, I like that, a mental health recipe.
It isn't really good for you, but it makes you feel
It makes you feel that. That means it's good. Okay, so it's a variation. It's called green macaroni and cheese. Now, keep in mind, it is green, so you've got to make sure you brush your teeth afterwards, or you may look disgusting to people, actually, when they look at you. Okay, start out with 9 ounces of macaroni.
9 ounces of macaroni.
So when you go to the store, what kind of macaroni do you choose when you shop?
I told you, I've only had it once.
Elbow macaroni. You could use ribbons. You know those little ribbons?
It's just regular macaroni. Macaroni with cheese.
Yeah, but macaroni has lots of different shapes. If you have a child at home, you might pick stars and stripes. They have little lines in them. Stars are lots of different kinds of macaroni, but 9 ounces of macaroni.
Yeah.
4.5 ounces of shelled edamame. You know edamame, don't you?
4.5 ounces of shelled whatever that is.
You don't know edamame.
No.
Oh, you know something? You are not a hipster. I mean, if there's one thing I know, you are not a hipster. You're not a hipster. You are not a foodie. You are not Japanese because it's a Japanese dish.
Okay.
You don't know edamame. My mother never knew edamame either.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, in fact, I didn't know edamame until probably 20 years ago, and then I learned about it. Edamame. Edamame is wonderful. It's a shelled pea. It's sort of a pea. It's delicious. You can get it in the frozen food section of your store. You often get it in Japanese restaurants as sort of an appetizer while you're waiting for the delicious food to come. Okay, 4.5 ounces.
Is that where the green comes in?
Edamame is green.
Okay.
Peas are green, Tom. I mean, I know you don't. Peas are green.
I know that.
I know you're shocked.
I mean, edamame
is a pea.
I don't know much,
pea.
But I know
you
that.
You know peas. You yeah. know your peas, and you know what else? You know your Q's.
Q's.
Okay. 3/4 of a cup of milk.
3/4 of a cup of milk?
You know where to buy milk, right?
Yes, I do.
You know
can
to
I
buy.
Get edamame there?
Yeah, yeah. Edamame, where you get your milk, depends. You know, if it depends on the store. Okay, now, this is for people who like it. 2 tablespoonfuls of nutritional yeast, if you like that flavor, okay?
2 big tea nutritional yeast.
Yeah, do you know the flavor of nutritional yeast?
No.
It's healthy. That's why you don't know. It's a healthy flavor. But some people really like nutritional yeast. When I eat anything with nutritional yeast, I feel proud. I feel like I'm doing something for the environment and I'm eating well. When in reality, it's just sort of a yeast product that's there. This is not rapid.
Does it taste good?
It has a smell to it, sort of a texture
okay.
to it, sort of a smell. Some people like it on popcorn. Some people hate it. My wife, Penny, hates it. If I put nutritional yeast in this, she would smell it and she would never eat it.
Uh-huh.
So if I make this for her, I cannot use nutritional yeast. In
okay.
fact, we don't even have nutritional yeast in our house because she hates it when I open up the jar.
Okay.
And then salt.
Salt, okay.
Yeah, quite a salt to taste.
Yeah.
Okay. Boil the macaroni.
Yeah?
Yeah, that's it. Can you do that? Boil macaroni. According to the directions.
That's it?
Boil the macaroni. Okay. Peel the edamame. Okay, so you have to peel it. These little peas things are in a pod. Peas
okay.
are in a pod, right?
Okay.
Peas in
yeah,
a pod.
Right.
Got it. Peel the edamame, throw away the shells, the milk, the nutritional yeast, and salt. Put it in a blender or food processor and puree it till it's smooth. Okay, very simple. You puree it. When the pasta is done, drain the pasta.
Right.
Okay, and then stir in this green cheese mixture. There's no cheese. There's milk, edamame, and nutritional yeast. Stir that into it, and now you're done. Now, was that a simple recipe?
Well, it's not mac and cheese, though.
Well, it's green mac and cheese, but I'm using mac and cheese to get people to kind of think of it. It's mac. There's mac in there, but there's no cheese.
It's mac and edamame.
Yeah, it's mac and edamame. Yeah, but nobody would buy it. If
that's
I were
right.
mac, because they wouldn't
that's
know
right.
what a lot of people would know what edamame is. They thought it would think it was like a name for their aunt or something like that.
Well, I learned a couple of things
yeah.
here. So
yeah, well, yeah, okay. Well, it's good.
I learned about edamame,
yeah,
and I learned
yeah.
about nutritional
that's right,
yeast.
That's right.
I'm not
right.
sure what I'm going to yeah. do with that knowledge.
That's right.
I'm not going to make it.
That's right. You're sure not going to make it. However, many of our listeners will want to make this, and they can find this on our website, zorbapastor.org. Photos of Tom, photos of me, other recipes, great information, zorbapastor.org, or just find us through Facebook, Simple as Pie.
Back to the phones we go, Zorba, at 800-462-7413. That's 1-800-462-7413. And now, Zorba, let's see if we can help a listener in Wallace, Idaho. Hi.
Hello, guys. My issue is I've had 3 eye surgeries in the last 3 years to repair the damaged retinas,
mm-hmm.
and it saved my vision, but I don't want to have another eye surgery.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not getting really great answers on what I can do to keep my retinas in good shape.
Yeah, what have you had? You've had retinal detachment or what?
Yeah, I've had 2 retinal detachments and some retinal tears.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. What I'm told, it's not, I don't have diabetes and
mm-hmm.
my blood pressure isn't that high. It's because I'm very nearsighted and the
right.
shape of my eye is
right.
longer.
Mm-hmm.
So it puts undue pressure on my retinas. And I'm 51.
Mm-hmm.
I have a nephew who's just turned 30. He had the same issue. So it's, I think it's genetic.
Let's talk about general health. Your blood pressure is what?
It varies between 130 and 140
mm-hmm.
and 80 and 90. 130
okay.
and 140 on the, I
yeah.
believe that's called the systolic.
Mm-hmm. Are you
and
on,
80 and 90 on the diastolic.
Are you on blood pressure meds at all?
No, not
uh-huh.
at all. Try to keep my salt intake very low.
Okay. How's it been since your salt intake has been low?
You know, it had gone up to 150
mm-hmm.
over 90, and
mm-hmm.
then I dropped it 10,
yeah.
15 points.
Yeah, you've got a machine at home? Do you have a blood
yes,
pressure
I do.
Machine?
We have two.
You have two machines at home. Is that overkill? Why do you have two machines at home?
Well, we have the, one where you use the stethoscope, and then we have the other one where it's just the automatic reading.
Yeah. Do they agree? That's very interesting. I have two machines at home. That's why I'm asking. I have two machines at home. One that uses the stethoscope and one that's automatic. That's why I'm asking. There was a Thomas laughing. It's kind of funny. I wanted to see if you have the same OCD about blood pressure that I have.
Yeah, I'm a little bit. That's why I'm calling your show. It's like my doctor said, he said, you know, don't engage in any mixed martial arts, and if you do, wear a helmet. Well, I don't plan on doing that.
Oh, this is too much. This is too much. So getting back to the measurements of blood pressure, first of all, let's talk about blood pressure for a minute. You want your blood pressure to be sort of around 120 over 80. That's your goal. If your blood pressure is hitting up over 140, it's too high. And I would recommend I would recommend taking a blood pressure medication. That's what I would do. So I'd measure it, you know, a couple of times a week. I'd look at it in the morning when you get up. That's what I would do. I might check it in the evening. If you really want to get good measurements, do it a couple of times a day and do it like, you know, every other day, every third day. See what those numbers are. If you're trending to 150, that means you can't control it with diet. And blood pressure, since we started treating aggressively, has dropped the stroke weight in the United States by 70%. I mean, we are dynamite when it comes to reduction of stroke in this country, and it's from blood pressure. So I would do that. And like you said, you've got two machines. Use the more accurate one, which would be the stethoscope.
Yeah.
Number two, general health. Do you exercise?
Yes, I do.
Okay. Do you weightlift?
No, not really, but I chop wood.
Okay.
It's kind of cold up here in the North Country.
Really? But, and Wisconsin, I just can't relate. In Wisconsin, it's always 70 and sunny.
Yeah.
That's what I hear.
In Wisconsin. The reason why I ask is when you go and you're lifting heavy things and you – Valsalva, it's called, when you go – you are actually increasing the pressure in your chest. And I think there's some evidence that you may be increasing the pressure in your eyeball. Because think about it. When you lift sometimes, you squint as you're lifting. And I don't know if that pressure of when you're doing that is going to affect the retinal tear. I don't know. But it's something I would think about as a possibility. There's no double-blind, placebo-controlled trial that's going to tell us whether or not it makes a difference. So I would stay away from lifting heavy things where I had to increase my pressure by going, I got to do this. That's what I would stay away from. In other words, I would think about that. Like you said, wear a helmet if you're doing martial arts. So I would think about that. The other question is, what's your pressure in your eye? Do you have glaucoma? Do you get it checked every year?
I get it checked every year. Mm-hmm. In fact, you know, the eye surgeons I have are really good.
Oh, yes.
They're really.
Yes.
Uh-huh. And so, in fact, there's a eye doc here in town, too, that checks it. So my pressures are great on the eyes.
Okay. Those are the things.
I was hoping there might be some kind of diet or I've heard about vitamin D.
I don't think so. I don't think so. I think you've got a shape issue. It sounds to me like you have really great ophthalmologist eye surgeons that are paying attention to it. It may not happen again. You know, your goal is to do that. But as I said, I would not Valsalva. I would engage in exercise. But I would keep my blood pressure under control because we've got to remember that blood pressure affects every single organ in our body. And so it affects your eye, too.
Good deal.
Thanks. Take care.
Bye-bye now.
Bye-bye.
800-462-7413, the toll-free number. And before the break, Zorba, let's take a quick email question from a listener named Joanne. She writes, Dear Zorba, first off, I enjoy your radio program. You have an enormous amount of knowledge and memory for helping people who call in. You must have been a good student. Okay, what are the advantages of using Celtic salt for health issues? And have you ever tasted it? Thank you.
Celtic salt. So I take this that this, first of all, I've never tasted Celtic salt. I have tasted salt. It's been around for gazillions of years. So salt is salt is salt. However, there are minor nutrients in various kinds of salt, you know, because Celtic salt, I'll take it, is probably sea salt, although I'm not 100% sure. But we know that the Celts live by the sea, and they undoubtedly have salt in the sea because it's on the ocean, so it's probably abbreviation of sea salt.
Maybe it's Celtic salt.
Celtic salt. Well, Celtic, you know, sea, it's always hard to decide if the C is pronounced as a C or a K.
But if
it's Celtic salt.
If I said Celtic, then would you know?
I still wouldn't know what Celtic salt is, but being a radio personality and a doctor, I can probably imagine that it probably contains mostly salt. Right? Right. I have derived that. But like all variations of salt, the salt that comes from Tibet, the salt that's mined in the salt mines in the Middle East, the salt that comes from sea salt, it's basically salt with minor variations. Some of it will have iodine in it, minimal amounts, the stuff from the sea. And undoubtedly, this will have minor variations. And then often it's packaged, and people are told that it has health benefits. I think the real issue is we still get too much salt in our diet. So if you want to choose a salt that you like because it has other micronutrients in it, by all means use it. But those micronutrients may or may not be useful for your health, but they will never harm you.
This is really good. You're able to talk about something you've never heard
of. Absolutely. You know what I sound like? I sound like a radio personality.
And you were a good student, by the way. I know.
Well, at times. At times I was a good student. I wasn't a good student in Miss Schutte's class in eighth grade. She gave me that F, that red F, and I'm still upset about it. And that was like 55 years ago, and it still bothers me. But she's not around. So.
I was such a bad student.
Were you a bad student?
Such a bad student that in one class in high school, I don't remember the class, I got my paper back. I had done it well, and the instructor gave me all sorts of praise
because you had done it so
for
well.
Not being a dummy for me. Have a question for the good doc? Zorba's here to help. Just post it to our Facebook page or send it along in an email to
Zorba@WPR.org.
An interesting topic to talk about that's coming up. More of your calls, of course, and our medical Mythbuster, too. All right here on Zorba Faster on Your Health from PRI Public Radio International. Tom Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. 800-462-7413 is the number if you have a question for Zorba. But Zorba, before our next call, we all hate that stuff you have to drink the night before you have the colon cancer test. There's another test, but there's some controversy about it.
Yeah, it's very interesting. So first of all, let's look at colon cancer.
Yeah.
We know that screening for colon cancer does make a difference because we know that polyps that sit in the colon, some polyps, not all of them, may become cancerous. So we remove polyps, we do a screening test. Once every 10 years for normal risk people, more often for high risk people or if you've had a polyp.
Yeah.
However, there are a couple of other tests. The fecal occult blood test, which is a test that's been around for a long time, which has been improved, so it's better, is actually for low-risk individuals almost as good. Okay, almost as good. But there's a new test on the block called Cologuard, which is just as effective, according to their research, as colonoscopy.
Okay. So
it's different than the fecal occult blood test. It is as good as a colonoscopy.
And you don't have to drink all that stuff.
You don't have to drink the water, and you don't have to go there. You don't have to take off a day from work. You don't have to have the anesthesia, so with it. I mean, colon cancer screening is not a pleasant thing to go through from start to finish. But if you have a test that you can do, which will basically look at the genes, that's what it's really looking at. It's basically looking at DNA that's in your poop. It'll be good. It's called Cologuard. It was developed. It happens to be in Madison, Wisconsin. Yeah. I do not own stock in the company, by the way. And they expected the U.S. Preventive Service Task Force to say, this is good as colonoscopy, and guess what?
They didn't say that.
They didn't. They said the jury is out. We're not going to recommend that yet. Well, immediately the stock in this company fell by nearly 50%. Exactly as you expected, because everyone thought that, gee, this is 97%, 95% as good as colonoscopy.
But it's now allowed to be called an alternative.
Well, it is an alternative. So,
why wouldn't that be the same?
Well, it's not the same because it's not necessarily reimbursed by all insurance companies the same. That's a biggie, right? That's a biggie. You know, insurance reimbursement, it's not cheap. And also, then it doesn't become a standard treatment. Now, I don't know what went into the mind of the U.S. Preventive Service Task Force. They are very, very conservative, but I think they are very, very good. And I think what their thinking was is that although we have a lot of information on this, we don't have enough information to say it's as good as the gold standard, meaning this is another gold standard. What they did was they said it's not as good as the gold standard, but it may be an alternative to those who don't want to have a colonoscopy.
So if I'm going to get a test, should I take this test?
Well, this can be very useful instead of the colonoscopy. The colonoscopy has problems, but I think this test is a highly effective, good test that is worthwhile pursuing, especially if you don't want a colonoscopy.
800-462-7413, the number to call if you have a question for Zorba. 800-462-7413. And back to the phones now, Zorba, a listener with us in Madison, Wisconsin. Hi.
Yeah, I have a question about ultrasound treatments. About 3 months ago, I was being treated for a rotator cuff problem, and which involved lengthy stretching exercises to loosen up the joint. And I had been using those for a couple months, and the physical therapist asked if I had ever had ultrasound for the same problem. I had not, so he went ahead. And I had four treatments with ultrasound over a period of 4 weeks, about 5 minutes each time. And within the fifth week, the rotator cuff pain and discomfort was completely cured. It's really gone from that.
Wow, that's wonderful.
And my question is, could that same modality be used for other joint issues, knees?
Well, it's really, first of all, it doesn't always work that way. In other words, you're one of the fortunate ones. And when they do ultrasound, what they're actually doing is they're often just heating up. The idea is really heating up the muscles and the ligaments that are in there around the joint. It's not actually doing anything to the joint. It may be doing something to the joint, but that's not the issue. The issue is the ligaments associated with the joint, sort of like a deep heat treatment. And ultrasound was very, very popular. Ultrasound and something called phoratic stimulation and also infrared heat through heating lamps were very, very popular years ago. And then they did double-blind studies and showed that the healing rate wasn't significantly better. It was a modality, but you couldn't say that this modality should kind of be used for everyone. I want to go back a bit to your problem. Did you fall on it, or how, what sort of diagnosis was there?
Yes, over time I was a downhill skier, and you often fall, and when you fall, you land on your shoulders.
Was. Yeah. You mean you're no longer a downhill skier?
Well, I'm getting a little old to do it anymore.
Man, come on, once a downhill skier, always a downhill skier.
Well, you're
please.
Right. And then I had a more dramatic trauma. I fell off a bicycle and jammed my elbow onto concrete, and it push the upper part of the arm.
Maybe you want to start to become a couch potato. I mean, it sounds like
that'd be better.
Sounds good to me.
sounds good to you. I love it.
Yeah, I'm doing that too.
See, yeah, Tom is the couch potato athlete of the year. But going back to this. So the answer is it works for some muscular injuries. It worked for your injury. Stretching exercises are still important. I think it may have been a combination of things. And then, of course, there's time. Tincture of time is a great healer. So I'm glad that they recommended it. It doesn't work with everyone. It worked for you. And sometimes that modality can be quite useful. Something to think about for anybody who has a rotator cuff injury or any injury to a muscle, nerve, or a ligament. Ask their physical therapist if they're going there what they think. And I often follow their lead. When I order physical therapy, I do evaluation and treat, so I allow them to look at it and make a decision because they're really pretty good about it.
Oh, the physical therapists can make a good decision.
Yeah, they make good decisions because they see it. They see what the response is. You know, I really look at co-managing those injuries with them.
Sure.
So I think you had a good physical therapist. Hope you get off that couch to do some things without injuring yourself. Maybe swimming. See,
well, I've got another shoulder to injure.
Thanks for your call.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, bye-bye. 800-462-7413. That's 800-462-7413. And Zorba, time again now for our Medical Mythbuster segment. Today's question is from a listener named Becca, who listens to the show on WNYE in Brooklyn, New York. She writes, "Hi, Zorba and Tom. I love your show and listen whenever I have a chance. My question is simple, but may not be all that obvious. Can snake venom be extracted from a human using a sucking method? I often see this in movies. Someone gets bitten by a snake, and the hero comes to the rescue by sucking the venom out of the victim's skin. Is this for real or just a Hollywood myth?"
No, it's for real. It's not a Hollywood myth at all. And, you know, if you go and you get a snake kit, when I used to, when I've hiked in the desert, you would often have a snake kit, which had a little kind of suction on there. In case you get bit by a snake, you suck it out. But the answer is yes, it actually is not a myth at all. And you can really do quite a good job. Basically, what you want to do is do a hickey to the snake bite. I mean, that's the amount of suction you want to have. You remember hickeys in seventh grade?
Yeah. Unfortunately, I didn't have any.
You didn't? Yeah. It was sort of a badge. Yeah, like, what do you have? I've got a hickey. She gave me a hickey. That's right. You still, well, Monica, has she ever given you a hickey?
Well, I won't go into that. Have a possible myth for Zorba? Just send an email to
Zorba@WPR.org or on Facebook, and you can also send us photos of your hickeys if you want to.
800-462-7413, the number to call if you have a question for Zorba, a serious question. As we welcome a listener now in El Paso, Texas. Hi.
Hi, this is Art.
Yeah, hi, Art. Yeah, how can we help?
Okay, two, three weeks ago, I had been kind of stressed out through the whole day. I got home, my girlfriend went over, and we're watching TV. She left, and I went to get ready for bed. When I went, I was brushing my teeth, I looked in the mirror, I saw these three vertical red stripes on my forehead.
Huh.
And it had happened actually a couple times before, but they weren't as dark. And I thought maybe I just had scratched it somehow or something like that. But kind of concerned me because they're pretty dark. And they're just three. It looks like somebody took three fingers and just down my forehead.
Huh.
So I kind of course, went to Google, did some research. A lot of people that I saw, they put up stress marks.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody put maybe broken capillaries, a rash, and then something called vasculitis was another thing I saw in there. And so I was just wondering if you all have ever heard about anything like that.
Well, first of all, it's you did a lot of research on there. Vasculitis, which means an inflammation of the vascular system, little arterioles, little arteries sort of in there, that can be a something that is quite significant. Hard to say, does it go away after you get them? You know?
It went away about after 3 days, it went away.
Uh-huh. Was there any trauma to the area? Did you bump it or bruise it? Were you sleeping or laying on it in a funny way?
No, when my girlfriend was there, she didn't say anything. Uh-huh. She would have mentioned it right away because they're really dark.
Uh-huh. Did she notice it herself? Did she say, "Hey, what's that on your forehead?" And she noticed it?
No. It wasn't there when she was there. And then I say within 10 minutes after she had left, I went to get ready for bed, and I noticed them, and they were just really dark. So they just came on really all of a sudden.
Uh-huh. Were they circular or they were lines? You said they were lines.
They were lines.
Did your girlfriend have a crayon or anything before she?
Not that I recall.
Not that I recall. I like that phrase. That's very good. Not that I recall. You know, rashes are very hard to figure out without looking at rashes. And this is a common problem that people often write me, you know, write us in our office. They'll go, "Well, I had this rash, and this was here, and that was here, and what wasn't?" We don't see the rash. It's very difficult to make the diagnosis. I can tell you, it's not a vasculitis, because it doesn't sound like one. It's not striae or stretch marks, because it doesn't sound like that. I don't know exactly what it was. I would have to look at it. It took a few days, so, you know, usually if it's something that's sort of muscular, it's going to disappear by the next morning. If it's blood under the skin, it's going to appear to be a black and blue mark. If it's a fungal infection, it's going to last longer, it's going to itch, and it's going to flake. So the short answer is I don't know.
Okay. You don't think this has anything to do with stress? Because that's one of the things I read.
No. Stress will produce a blush, You know, we blush when we're stressed, but then it goes away. You know, after that, we sweat when we're stretched. So stress produces changes, but they're acute, and then they disappear when the stress goes away. When you're angry, you're stressful, you see a change in your face. But when you stop being angry, it goes away. It doesn't last for 3 days. Thanks for sharing that with us.
I appreciate the help. Thank you.
You take care.
Bye-bye. And before we head out today, Zorba, we love it when our listeners chime in with helpful information. The following email is from a listener named Jim. He writes, "Hi, Zorba and Tom. On a recent show, there was a question about purple potatoes. Potatoes with the darkest colors have more than 4 times the antioxidant potential of those with lighter skin and flesh. The purple pigment comes from the antioxidant powerhouse anthocyanin. Studies show that this flavonoid possesses anti-cancer and heart-protective effects, as well as benefits like boosting the immune system and protecting against age-related memory loss. Also, it is sunlight that causes the skin to turn green. Potatoes are tubers, a specialized stem that is used to store energy from the plant. Since it is a stem, it still has the same cells that the above-ground parts of the plant have for getting energy from the sun, including the chlorophyll. Now, that's why they will turn green when exposed to light. The light activates these cells and forms chlorophyll to be able to turn the light into energy."
So what's on the test? Is this a multiple choice test about potatoes?
I wasn't paying any attention while I was reading.
I was paying attention, but I thought this is a complete course on
potatoes. This is more information than I wanted.
TMI? I don't know about that. Well, first of all, I don't think it prevents age-related dementia. That was one of the I was listening when it said it prevents age-related dementia. Yeah. If it prevented age-related dementia, we would have capsules of anthocyanin or whatever, however you pronounce it. We would have capsules of that. I do not think of it as age-related. However, it may have more micronutrients, and I would buy that because color and micronutrients follow each other in nature. So to me, that makes sense. So it probably is a healthier potato. Storing energy from the sun, of course. All carbohydrates do that. And potatoes are, of course, a great storehouse. And the big issue with potatoes, don't eat too many of them, and fries are not the best way to go.
I was going to ask you if I pronounced anthocyanin right.
It sounded right to me. It sounded right to me. You know, and can you use it in a sentence? You know, that's the real. You know when you can use it? Crossword.
I can
puzzles.
Use it in a sentence.
Go ahead.
I don't know how to pronounce the word anthocyanin.
That's not fair, Tom. That is not fair.
Have a helpful tip for Zorba. Just post it to our Facebook page or send it along in an email to
Zorba@WPRD.org.
See you next week, Zorba.
Stay well, Tom.
If you missed anything during the show or just want to download our show podcast, visit us on the web
at ZorbaPastor.org or, once again, Facebook.
Don't forget, you can call us anytime at 800-462-7413. Zorba Pastor on Your Health is a production of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's not intended as a medical diagnosis, so please do check with your doc. Our executive producer is Carl Christensen, and our technical director is Brad Colburn. Our theme music is by Leo and Ben Sidran. For Zorba Pastor, I'm Tom Clark, hoping for your company on the next Zorba Pastor on Your Health.
Copies of today's show are available through the radio store at 800-747-7444. Ask for program number 1219Z. More information on Zorba, his clinic, and healthy living, including heart-healthy recipes, podcasts, and show archives, is available online at ZorbaPastor.org.
PRI, Public Radio International.